It's interesting that you mentioned like this house is Zen, or yes, I often hear those perspectives, which I don't have any strong opinion on it, towards it, but I may have different perspective or different understanding from those teachings that you find in Zen temples or in Zen books. And I am a big fan of Zen because of two reasons. First is joy, and the second is oneness. So I define Zen Buddhism as joy and oneness.
Find your ikigai at ikigaitribe.com. My guest today on episode 79 of the Ikigai podcast is Mama Ware, founder of Zen Eating, a well-being advisor and researcher at Chio University in Japan. Mama Ware wrote the book Zen Eating, a Japanese mindful practice for well-being and true fulfillment. And in Japanese, that is Zen Eating, Sekai ga mitometa shiawase no tabekata. And Mama Ware wrote this book last year, and it introduces a new meditation-based practice for supporting the well-being of busy people around the world through conscious eating. Educated in Japan, Egypt, and India, Mama Ware has delivered Zen eating workshops to thousands of participants in over 30 countries globally, and her clients include companies such as Google, McKinsey, Accenture, Panasonic, Mitsui, Fujitsu, and Salesforce, as well as many universities like Imperial College and India Institute of Technology. Mama Ware conducts original research into comparative happiness, Zen, Japanese culture, and spirituality. Mama Ware's mission is to invite people to tune into joy and bliss. Mama Ware, thank you for joining me today.
Hello, Nick, and hello, everyone. Delighted to be on your podcast and look forward to talk about Zen eating under the context of Ikigai.
Yes, exciting. So with that, would you like to share a little background and share your journey to becoming a Zen eating guide?
Of course. So I am sharing how to eat now, which is like conscious eating. But to come to here, I had like long journey. I have been meditating for 10 years based on Zen, Zazen meditation, and other many types of meditation. And I was born in Japan, the countryside of Japan, with mountain, like north countryside of Japan. And my grandparents, they have a mountain and surrounded by wild vegetables, wild plants. And without knowing, they have this connectedness. They have this connected life. But I grew up in Tokyo, so I was always admiring them, like how beautiful their life is. But I'm having this urban life, which I like. So I decided to work for a wellness department at luxury resort hotel in Japan. And I was happy that I was able to have wellness moment with my clients, guests at that resort. But at the same time, I was working too much, overworking, and I burned out. I had to quit my job because of my health condition. And that was challenging for me. I was working for wellness, but my own wellness, I didn't have time to take care of my own wellness. And I moved to India and decided to live in India for 1.5 years to 2 years. And I learned Indian traditional medicine, which called Ayurveda, and Indian nutrition, how to make balanced diet for your body, according to your body condition, your body type, which was fascinating. And the reason that I started learning about this nutrition was my mother overcame from the chronic illness, which is called rheumatoid arthritis, mm-hmm. by changing her diet to healthier vegetable oriented or like less artificial things.
Sure.
And so I realized, wow, what to eat and health is so strongly related. So I thought that nutrition is something really important for me and for everyone. That's why I went into nutrition and diet, healthy diet. But I realized that as I became more healthy diet geek, mm-hmm. I realized like I was far from happy state because I was so judgmental. Like, I cannot eat this and you should not eat this. And at that point, I realized that how to eat or mindset while eating is as important as what you eat. So I came back to this meditational approach, which I started when I lost my father by helicopter accident at the age of 14. I was 14 years old. So I met Zen, and Zen helped me so much. So I integrated Zen and this eating, and I started sharing how to do it, how to practice it with people, with companies. So that's how I started Zen eating.
Well, thank you for sharing all that. And I'm assuming this is a daily practice for you. So this is a bit of a joke question, but what did you have for breakfast today? And how slowly or mindfully did you eat your breakfast today?
So to be honest with you, I didn't have anything for breakfast. I just have had a cup of hot water, which I do drink every day. And I love drinking hot water because I feel my body get relaxed by drinking it. But the point is how much you become aware of your bodily reaction. So that's what I always value. That's important for me, and that I think that's important for you too. But usually I try to eat consciously anytime, but maybe like externally I may eat as fast as you are, but I try to maintain this conscious level regardless of this speed. Mm-hmm. That's how I practice in daily life. But I will talk about how to practice later, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a good point. I think we need to start with some foundation.
Yes.
And this is how you define Zen. And as you know, many Japanese words become misunderstood or appropriated in the West. And I think Zen is maybe understood by some, but misunderstood. I think a lot of people use Zen as an adjective and saying, this house is very Zen or something. But yes, and it's a bit strange. It's probably a bit strange. They relate it to design or architecture or to aesthetic. So how do you define Zen? Hey there, Nick Kemp here, and I wanted to touch base and let you know about my new course, the Find Your Ikigai course. Developed in consultation with Japan's leading Ikigai researchers, the Find Your Ikigai course is the only culturally accurate and evidence-based practical guide to the Ikigai concept. If you are interested in learning more about the Find Your Ikigai course, please visit ikigaitribe.com. Now back to the episode.
Yes. So it's interesting that you mentioned like this house is Zen or yes, I often hear those perspective, which I don't have any strong opinion on it, towards it, but I may have different perspective or different understanding from those teachings that you find in Zen temples or in Zen books. And I am a big fan of Zen because of two reasons. First is joy, and the second is oneness. So I define Zen Buddhism as joy and oneness. Mm-hmm. So joy means ultimate joy without condition, and Zen teaches you to know that you already have enough in your hands if you pay attention to what you have in your hands. So this fulfillment or this contentment gives you this enoughness and joyful life, so that you realize, I realized, wow, today being here is heaven. And this sense of joy I learned from, or I learned through Zen Buddhism and oneness, I found this beautiful explanation in the book written by D.T. Suzuki, Daisetsu Suzuki. Have you heard about him?
I think he introduced Zen to America.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
In the 50s. And so he explained about oneness by using this metaphor, by using this explanation. In Japanese, nature and self uses same letter, and that letter shows the same meaning. And in Japanese, myself is already part of nature in the language itself. That sense of oneness, because we feel pain by experiencing separation, divided. We feel happiness by experiencing connected or sense of oneness. So if you bring back this connection with the nature or part of nature, that you are part of nature, you're part of cycle, then this sense of oneness will bring you ultimate blissfulness in your life. That's what I have learned from Zen Buddhism.
Well, that's a powerful lesson. And I think you're right. We're always craving and seeking more than we really need. And we suffer because of that, because we're always wanting more and we're never satisfied. But you're right, we have more than enough. It's important to be present to find contentment in what we already have.
Yes.
And I love that idea of nature, and that it seems like we've lost our connection to nature and we suffer because of that as well.
So we try to unnaturally control nature maybe sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't work. So we should know that we are part of nature, and that leads us, our consciousness, our collective consciousness as human being, our collective consciousness should be shifted now. Mm-hmm. And so that we will be able to tune into endless, unlimited prosperity, which is continuously given by this planet,
yeah.
Earth, nature. And so we can learn from Zen how to create the next standard of prosperity without exploitation. And that prosperity doesn't mean money, but that prosperity is unlimited. And this is how we can learn in modern life, how we can learn from Zen, I think.
I like it. I like this idea of oneness with nature, and I guess connection with others. And that's something I think we're missing in the modern world. We don't consider nature as a pillar of health, and we're connecting less with people. We tend to connect more online than we do in person. And we seem to have all these problems of loneliness and sadness and depression. So I think you're right. We have everything we need. We're just ignoring what we need and chasing unrealistic ideas of what we think is prosperity. As you mentioned, we might be chasing money or wealth or success, but if we stop, we would realize, oh, I already have a lot I can be grateful for. So that's a really interesting perspective of Zen, because I've never heard anyone describe it as like that. I think we definitely associate to, you know, meditation and mindfulness, and maybe being almost being alone. Like Zen's often described as, you know, something you do with meditation and with your thoughts. So
Well, I totally agree with that. But through meditation, we will tune into joy and bliss. That's how I'm understanding. And that's, I think, how people can apply Zen into this modern lifestyle.
Well, with that, let's talk about how you have applied Zen to eating. So what is Zen eating?
Yes, Zen eating is the way you eat. It's mindful eating, but it's inspired by Japanese Zen Buddhism, and it's going beyond, like it goes beyond more than mindful eating. So ultimately, I'd love you to experience this connectivity that we were talking now, the sense of oneness with this, with the planet. And so through eating one grain of rice, if you imagine where this rice came from, how many people were involved to your one meal? And so you may imagine soil, the sun, water, rain, air. And if you imagine the generations, you can trace back many generations. This rice, one grain of rice, is the baby seed. And this baby had father and mother. And that father and mother had father and mother. So you can trace back maybe 4.2 billion years old.
Yeah.
Because there are no gap in between. So connectivity in the dimension of space and dimension of time. And it goes to future, forward as well. So this sense of oneness that we are living in a cycle is really important, I think, to experience through Zen eating. In order to experience this oneness, I suggest you to open up your body first. When I offer workshops or experience a practice of Zen eating, I usually start with asking you to smell or touch with your hands. So if you open your five senses, our body is usually sleeping and we don't pay much attention to our five senses or internal perception, which is like your stomach senses. So that's the gateway to open up your body and bring back the connection with your body will lead you to bring back the connection with the planet.
Wow, that is fascinating. It actually reminded me of a time when my family, so when we moved back from Japan to Melbourne, and my son was quite young and we were sort of looking things to do in our community, we actually found a Chan Buddhism center, so a Chinese Zen Buddhism center. And we started volunteering there, and they used to offer us meals. And when we were given the meals, we were told we had to sit separately, not talk, face Buddha and eat mindfully. And so it was quite, well, first it was quite amusing. So I'd be sitting somewhere, my son would be behind me somewhere, my wife would be in another corner of this big room, and we're kind of, you know, I'd be looking at my son and smiling, but we really had to pay attention to only the experience of eating and obviously have feelings of appreciation, eating everything, and yeah, trying to savor the food, chew thoughtfully, and be very present in that, almost like a ritual, like really only eating. And it was quite powerful, and I really began to enjoy it, the idea of I don't have to talk, I don't have to think about other things, I can try and connect to the food. So I guess, yeah, through connecting through food, we are connecting to something larger, like you're right, who was involved in making this food? How was nature involved? And that can extend beyond our planet, I guess. So if we go far back enough. So that's interesting.
Oh, so interesting. I'd like to add the beautiful comments that you shared now, you can amuse by experiencing solitude, but that solitude is not loneliness. You deeply connect with yourself and with food in front of you. And when you fully connect with yourself and this food, then you realize that you cannot be alone, never be alone. Everything is always connected or interrelated. So eating quietly is amusing.
That is amusing. So the idea of eating quietly and in solitude, yeah, that it is amusing, but it is, it is right. I think it might take a while to get accustomed to, but it's also relaxing and it kind of nourishes your spirit and your soul as well as your mind and body.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning it. I forgot to talk about soul, spirit nourishment. So a lot of my clients or guests that experience Zen eating usually say, wow, like they realize food is not fuel to your body, but it's the total nourishment to your existence, your entire existence, soul, spirit included.
I think so. And this is, it's kind of crazy because we, you know, most of us eat two or three times a day. We're often snacking, we're eating on the go. So it's something we do every day, but we don't optimize the experience or we don't give the experience enough care and time. So this is obviously what you're promoting to think. Suzuki said this, like Suzuki Sensei said, when you eat, just eat. And when you do that, first there's some resistance with your mind and your jumping from all these thoughts and what you have to do and what happened yesterday or whatever. But with practice, you can almost lose time in eating slowly. So it's not something serious, is it? It's something almost relaxing, and you actually describe it to be playful while eating and to use fresh eyes. So I think we should emphasize it's not like, oh, you have to meditate while you're eating and it's something serious. You describe it as something as playful. So would you like to touch on that?
Sure. Playfulness is really important as Zen practitioners or anyone. We tend to think things seriously or too seriously. And I am the person who takes things seriously. And so I love meditation. I love any kind of mindful practices, but I always find it really difficult to make it habituated. So after doing some meditation course or something, I can do meditation every morning properly, sitting properly, maybe for 1 month. And then after a while, I usually do less. And so I started hating my this always gave up. And I feel that, oh, well, like I eat every day twice or three times and I can practice meditation through eating. It's something that I can do as well. So I started eating with playfulness. So with using, having fresh eyes, wow, this structure. Suppose like I'm drinking hot water. And you can be drinking this hot water as like first time so that you may be aware of many things through drinking just hot water, temperature, where this water came from, river, cloud, rain, and it goes back to the ocean after you. Wow, this water has this cycle and I am living in this cycle. And I'm sensing it. How wonderful that I have five senses. How wonderful that I don't have to command my internal organs to process it. Without knowing it, without me knowing it, my internal organ does everything that I need. And so how miracle it is that you can be not knowing it. So those playfulness is really important than knowing accurately where this came from. You don't have to know, maybe. You can, but you don't have to. So playfulness than accuracy.
Playfulness over accuracy. I mean, I see the wonder in you. You're like, oh, like just imagining what was involved with this cup of water. How did it get here? And there is a cycle and there is a journey of that water, but it doesn't end with you. It still continues with you.
Yes.
So we don't think about that at all. I don't, so, but you do. So, but maybe I'll start to think about that now after this discussion. And of course, as children, we're told, you know, don't play with your food. But I like this idea of having almost like a playful mind and, oh, yeah, seeing things anew again with your food and, yeah, being it's like in awe of the food. How did it get to me? I guess that makes you more present.
Yes.
And being present is very powerful. So would you say this practice has helped you be more present in other areas of your life?
Totally, 100%.
Yeah, I'm sure it has.
Yes. Like, this is not one-time practice, but it's a lifelong practice as we eat every day till the end of the day, till the end of our life. Mm. So this lifelong practice is helping me as a practitioner, as one of the practitioners, I can apply this sense of wonder or how miracle that this functions like this. So this sense of appreciation, nothing is granted. This kind of attitude is helping me to tune into joy and bliss on all fronts in my life.
Well, that is obviously one of the benefits of Zen eating. So would you like to share other benefits of Zen eating?
Sure. Benefits of Zen eating. It is a good question. So yes, there are so many benefits. Easiest one is physical benefit. Like people who come to me to practice Zen eating, some people has problem with obesity or want to lose weight, they obviously can be more aware of how they eat, how much they eat. So say, for example, when you place your hands on your stomach, which I usually recommend to everyone, and then ask your stomach how much you want to eat now, the amount that you want to eat today may be different from yesterday. So you always ask your body each and every time so that you can be having friendly attitude to your body. So you start not hating your body even if you think that you are chubby, but you start having this friendly relationship with your body and as well as your food. Friendly relationship with your food. So rebuild that relationship with food, with your body, and as a result, with your life as well. That's physical benefit and mental benefit as well. Joyous, calmness, playfulness, and feeling connection. Living in connectivity will give you ultimate calmness, deep calmness, but with joy. So that's, I think, some of the benefits.
Well, that's really interesting about the conversation with your tummy, because I think I learned in Japan that Japanese see the gut as a second brain of the body. So it's like two brains having a conversation.
Yes.
That's a very non-threatening way to think, what is my stomach really feeling? And I might say, oh, well, I'm a little bit hungry, but I don't need that much. And maybe something healthy, you know, I don't. Because I guess emotional eating is a big problem. Yeah, we get stressed, so we grab something, and that's usually something full of sugar or a comfort food, which might not be healthy. So this slower, more gentle conversation with your guts or with your tummy sounds really positive.
Yes. Yeah. So that you can choose before doing this emotional eating. When you start having conversation with your second brain, you can wake up your body wisdom, your body intelligence, and you are able to unleash your unlimited potential by waking up your body intelligence. Because if you live with your brain only, or if you live with your mind only, then this is so limited. But if you make alignment of your body, mind, soul, and spirit, you can unleash your full potential and you can live so energetically, which happened to me. I was happy from before, but I feel like, wow, this alignment makes me so energetic. And a lot of my clients experience something similar.
Wow, it's such a easy solution to finding new energy, this mind-body, but also it also sounds like it's mind-body and kokoro connection. And I think Japanese, when they say kokoro, it's your mind, heart, and spirit as sort of one entity or working together. And, yeah, we live an embodied experience. We have a body and we experience life through our body, our five senses, but we also feel emotionally, we think logically, but it's all happening together. So, yeah, food seems like a really good, our relationship with food and how we eat seems like a really good solution to control, you know, not controlling, but living with all of that. Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing. And you have so much energy. I'm looking at you now and you're beaming with joy and happiness. So so this
we all can.
Okay, well, let's find out how. So how can we practice Zen eating?
Yes, I'd like to offer everyone by introducing three steps of practicing Zen eating, if it sounds something doable, easy to do.
Sounds good.
First, I invite you to turn off your mobile at your dining table or keep your mobile in different room so that you don't have to put your effort to concentrate or focus on your eating. You automatically can focus. And second step is put your hands together, palms together before and after eating. So take one moment, take a pause. And you may also want to say itadakimasu, which means I humbly receive before eating. And gochisou samadeshita, thank you for the food and everyone who involved. So if this prayer helps you, otherwise you can do one breathing, deep breathing before eating and after eating. And if you are having monkey mind and you want to start eating right, like immediately, then you can start doing after eating this hand together after eating. So it might be easier for you to apply if you have very busy life. Start from after eating, hands together after finishing your meal. And third point is a bit intermediate. I recommend you to smell before drinking your tea, before eating your meal, your snack or sweet, whatever. Smell is so powerful. Smelling is really powerful. By smelling, you can open up your body. And once your body open up, it will guide you to this sense of oneness, connectivity. You can open up by smelling a cup of tea. You can open up your five senses and you remember that you have body. And that the sensation of body open up your body wisdom. So remind yourself that you have body is first step. So these three steps, how does it sound?
I think it's wonderful. And I think one of the most powerful lessons I learned from living in Japan, I think, was kimari monk, like these set expressions and cultural practices. So, yeah, they're just little gestures, but they're very meaningful. So saying itadakimasu and gochisou sama deshita before and after a meal, if you do it properly and with feeling, does make a difference. And you increase your, it's like it increases your well-being because you're being grateful for what you're receiving, and then you're acknowledging again, I'm grateful for what I've just eaten. It's a very powerful concept. And, you know, we do it at home here. But it also reminds me of the word, in a way, like chanto suru. So it's kind of like eating properly, like eat with care, eat with gratitude, and before you eat, even be thankful. And the idea of smelling, that could be a really good reminder to slow down, yeah? So
yes,
that's obviously what it is, to slow down, smell the food, and make you be more present. It actually makes me think, one of the things I know about Japanese food is it's not overpowering food. It's not strongly tasting food. But there's a beautiful subtlety to Japanese taste. And I guess you, if you're more present, you then taste the food and the deliciousness and the wholesomeness of Japanese food. Because I form this impression that Japanese don't only eat for taste, they eat for how the food feels in their body and the satisfaction. And I think that's why you have the expression like hara hachibun me, like eat to 80%. Whereas maybe in Australia and the West, we're driven by taste. And so a lot of our foods, very sweet or very salty, very strong flavors, because we need that because we're not mindful, we're not present. And so we have to put more taste into our food to, you know, enjoy it. So it's really interesting how just being mindful connects you deeply to taste.
It's really interesting that the component of satisfaction, I think Western, as you said, like Western or punchy taste food can give satisfaction. I wouldn't say that like surface, but the component of satisfaction, how structured, how do you structure your satisfaction? And if you rely on taste only, then maybe your body, your whole existence, or I would suggest you to see the satisfaction from your whole existence, whole body, so that the food that you want to eat may be different. By seeing the satisfaction from wholeness.
It's a different state. We're in a different, it's like we're changing our state from one of reactive, anxious, hungry to still being hungry, but present and mindful and aware. So it sounds like this Zen eating is a solution to a lot of our problems where we're eating on the go. We are very compulsive and then we don't chew properly, and then because we don't chew properly, we don't even taste the food properly, and then we probably overeat. So do you think Zen eating is a solution to these bad habits or this fast lifestyle we live today?
Pretty much so, yes. And I'd like to break down into three steps again. So first, if you realize, if you notice that you do binge eating or you have anxiety, that's first step. And I'd like to encourage you to be aware and be acknowledged and embrace that the fact that you could pay attention to that realization instead of blaming yourself being like so, having anxiety. Is not something that you blame yourself, but be aware and embrace that fact. The second step is take a pause and to listen to your body. Your body is amazing. Your body has intelligence. Your body has wisdom. So ask your body what your body needs now. and so that you can connect with your internal wisdom and trust your body a little more so that your internal wisdom will guide you to the place that you need to be. And third step is be playful and be curious. Whatever you experience, some negative feelings as well, negative emotions as well, that's something that you can be curious with. What is happening inside of me? And you can be playful later on, maybe having those difficult moments. So I think these three steps, you can build up this relationship with yourself and others surrounding environment by practicing Zen eating. So you can apply in this way in your life as well. And so as a result, I think internal transformation may change your choice and behaviors. Yes, it will be gradual shift, yet radical shift.
It actually sounds like a type of self-care that has amazing benefit, transformational benefit, not just to your health and body, but maybe even to your relationships and your thinking of the greater world because mindfulness, yeah. So
yes.
it's quite amazing. I was just going to say we have a chance to do it every day, like two or three times today we have a chance to practice this.
totally. And I wanted to add to as a solution for bad eating habit or binge eating, I would suggest you not to force to stop eating snacks or binge eating. You don't have to force yourself to stop it. It doesn't help to change your diet, actually. And also, don't become a victim of modern life, stress life, but create peace in our life by yourself or with the help of this connectivity. And also, don't hate the symptoms, but each time you eat, you can tune into joy and bliss. And remember how miracle it is that you're eating something beautiful, the fruit of the planet, and your body is fruit of the planet as well.
Well, actually, I've got a question later on, but I'll ask it now. Can you practice Zen eating with junk food?
That's an interesting question. What do you think, Nick?
I think you can, because it might help you. First, you might have the enjoyment and think, this is why I like this junk food. But maybe your body might let you know, okay, this tastes good, but this is not good for me. It's not good for us. It's not good for our body. So maybe being more mindful of eating junk food might start that conversation where you eventually switch to something that will ultimately help your body. So I like that approach. We don't have to say, all right, only do Zen eating with healthy food. We can say just start being mindful and practice Zen eating, and it might take you towards a better, healthier, relationship with your body and food.
totally agree. That's why I said internal transformation may change your behavior, your choices. You can have healthier choices or sustainable choice, regenerative choices, or ecological behaviors by changing your attitude, changing your perception, not by force. I have to change doesn't help you, but your internal transformation will change your external choices as well.
Yeah, a Western interpretation of this might be like slow eating. I think I've heard the expression of slow food, but it's probably beneficial to eat slowly, meaning eat mindfully, eat with presence, eat with gratitude. And so slow eating might be the answer to fast food, because eventually you'll stop eating fast food.
Slowness is fast easy step to be aware?
All right. Well, I have an interesting question, and I learned this from Ken Moggi, and it's probably related to what we're discussing. And it was something I'd never heard before, despite living in Japan for so long, like 10 years. So he introduced me to this concept of konai chomi, cooking in the mouth. And this is where you add rice to your mouth, keep the rice in your mouth, and then you add something else. It could be a pickle or a piece of fish or a vegetable, and then you chew it all together and mix it up in your mouth. And it's like you're creating a new dish in your mouth. So do you practice this with Zen eating?
Interesting to hear about it. I like Ken Mogi-san. I met him once.
He's amazing, yeah.
He's amazing. And yes, so my shortest answer is Japanese like to sense subtle change. So by doing konai chomi, cooking in your mouth, by doing this, you can experience different tastes each and every bite. I think that's why we invented this way of eating. And so I just came back from India last week. I went to South India, and you may know that they use banana leaf to eat food. And I saw them mixing everything up, soup, rice, pickles, boiled vegetables, everything mixed before start eating. And part of me enjoy the new culture of eating by mixing everything. And part of me said, like, wow, if you mix them up, every single bite will taste really similar. So that's something that I found Japanese-ness, like subtle change. We enjoy subtle change. And this subtleness is a key point to key factor to understand Japanese culture. You may think rice is tasteless or rice is too bland to eat only, but I strongly believe that rice is tasteful. And yeah, so this subtle change, subtle flavor, subtle aroma, the awareness of subtleness is the reason that we enjoy cooking in your mouth.
This is a beautiful aspect of Japanese culture, this observance of subtlety. And you do it with nature, you do it with food. And I do remember when I first went to Japan, or actually the second time I went to Japan to work, and I was teaching English. And I'd be teaching basic English, and one of the most common questions would be, oh, what's your favorite food? And many Japanese would say rice. And my initial reaction was, what? Like rice? So for us, I mean, rice can be quite bland, yes, and tasteless in the West, and we don't eat it that much. And our quality of rice is probably average, but I do love Japanese rice. When I eat rice in Japan, there is a difference, and it's quite satisfying just eating a good bowl of rice. It feels good. There is a different texture, and there is a subtle taste to it. And sometimes Australians will add a soy sauce to plain rice. And it's like overkill. You're sort of killing the flavor with too much salt. But yeah, the idea of appreciating subtlety is something I learnt in Japan. And it's, again, it takes us back to being present, to mindfulness, which is very powerful. Yeah.
Nick, could you allow me to add one more thing about konai chomi?
Yes, please.
Do you know the concept of Zen garden? This Zen garden is inducing your imagination. It seems like tasteless or bland because it doesn't have beautiful roses, or it is completed by you. You are co-creator of the garden. It's the concept of Zen garden, which what I understand about Zen garden is you view the dry rocks and then you observe it, you see it, and then you perceive it. That's when Zen garden complete. But Western garden is already completed by landscape designer. So Konai Chomi, cooking in the mouth, has something similar. If it has something similar, it's interesting, I think. It's finally completed inside of your mouth.
Well, that is interesting. And that also reminds me of an expression I learned from a researcher, Dr. Yasuhiro Kutera Sensei. He lives in England and he's been on the podcast. He introduced me to the idea or the concept that in Japan, weeds are valued because weeds have this resilience and strengths. And he introduced me to the concept of zaso damashi, like the tenacity of weeds.
Wow.
And so it was so powerful because in the West, we want to weed out all the weeds of our garden. Whereas in Japan, I'm not sure to what degree, but weeds are recognized for their resilience and for their tenacity to come back. And they're a natural part of a garden and they have benefits to a garden. So that's this deeper level of thinking and understanding. And in the West, perhaps you're right, we landscape for only one perspective of beauty. So there is so much to learn from Japanese culture. It's amazing. Yeah. Hey, it's Nick here. I hope you are enjoying this conversation. Momoa-san and I will continue this conversation on Zen eating in the next episode. This episode was brought to you by the Find Your Ikigai course. Developed in consultation with Japan's leading Ikigai researchers, the Find Your Ikigai course is the only culturally accurate and evidence-based practical guide to the Ikigai concept. To learn more about the Find Your Ikigai course, please visit ikigaitribe.com.